This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, good morning. This is Arvind Yuvraj, and you are listening to Enterprise. And on today's show, Frederick Demopoulos, or Fritz, as his friends call him. He's the co-founder of Hong Kong-based Queen's Road Capital, which is, of course, a venture capitalist firm, joins us to talk about the process of picking promising startups, the next wave of Asian startup giants, and the challenges of being a successful venture capitalist. Tell me, what is the focus of Queen's Road Capital?
Great. Arvind, first, it's great to be here. And I'm always happy to talk to Malaysians. I mean, I've set up two businesses with people from KL, actually, over the years. Queen's Road Capital, we're an early stage venture fund. We focus on technology companies, internet companies, digital media, education firms in mainland China and Southeast Asia. We try to get in early, mentor our founders, and help them build great businesses.
And why get into the VC space, like for you personally?
So I've been an operator for many years. I've set up, as I mentioned before, a few companies in China, in the sports business, women's fashion business, online games, and online travel. And we were fortunate to have a couple of exits. I'd been building businesses for many years, and I thought that it would be good to get on the investor side, you know, take a bit of a step back and use my experiences and mentorship skills to help the next generation of entrepreneurs hopefully build great businesses. So Queen's Road HQ is on Queen's Road in Hong Kong, right?
In Hong Kong.
Yes, yeah. So Queen's Road is the main business district. It's the main business drag, I guess you could say, of Hong Kong.
Why is it up in Hong Kong?
So first and foremost, my family's from Hong Kong. Secondly, Hong Kong is an international city, but it's also at the doorstep to China. So it has a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. So we can do things in China, but we can also do things in the region. Thirdly, I think Hong Kong has a unique tradition of producing buccaneering companies, such as Hutchison or Jardines or whoever. And we'd like to follow in that tradition as a next generation investment vehicle.
So Queen's Road Capital invests in something that you call the future of work. So what do you mean by that exactly?
So we feel that technology, internet technologies, machine learning, big data, collectively are disrupting how we work on a daily basis. And for the first time in years, small businesses in particular now have access to the same tools, approaches, technologies, and methods that historically were only reserved for larger companies. And so I feel that these sort of tools will help small businesses to compete better, to think differently about how they manage their workforces. And I think it's just a fantastic opportunity. So it's very much a B2B play. To give you an example, how companies recruit and compensate and motivate and monitor their employees is completely different today than it was before. Now we have the tools through smartphones and big data and analytics to figure out who might be a good employee, figure out unique ways to discover those potential employees and bring them on board, and then once they join us, to try to motivate them and monitor their performance in unique and interesting ways that haven't been done before. Secondly, internet technologies have allowed businesses to think differently about how do they market to customers through new forms of demand generation techniques, CRM, and just other approaches. On the supply side, how companies manage their supply chain, how they manage various vendors, whether it's travel management companies or their suppliers of widgets, for example, or really whatever. We're seeing all sorts of new ways. And it all comes down to some big, big trends we're seeing. One trend is SaaS platforms or cloud-based solutions that have allowed again, small business to have access to the same tools that were previously reserved only for large companies. Secondly, we're seeing that technology is more open source. It's more off the shelf. A small business doesn't need to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. They can just buy off the shelf what hundreds of thousands of other companies are buying. Whereas again, 10 years ago, the only companies that had access to that were maybe some of the big companies, and they were using it to their advantage to stay big. But now we're seeing these small sharks pick at these larger whales. And thirdly, surprisingly, and obviously your listeners in Malaysia would appreciate this, is almost everything is in English. And what I mean by that is, if you're getting a PhD in computer science in Graz, Austria, or in Marseille, France, or in Mexico City, you'll find that all the textbooks are in English. Almost all the classes are in English. Your dissertation is in English. Everything is in English. And meaning there's a common language now, which is English, and another common language of just technology and approaches to business, which is have just permeated everywhere.
So I specifically asked about future of work, because if you look at the field, it sounds more like, how do you put it? It sounds vague, right? Whereas if you look at something like healthcare, it's more solid and it has more structure, right? I mean, is that true or am I completely off the mark?
No, I mean, it's. I'll be honest with you, it's true. Venture investing is a high-risk proposition. We have to take a portfolio approach. It means we have to invest in 10 companies while hoping that one of those or two of those will turn out to be somewhat successful. And maybe if one's a rocket ship, and then I can appear on television instead of radio, right? it's true that by more narrowly defining your activities, such as digital health or travel, sure, that's easier to grasp. But to be honest, it's easier for other people to grasp too. We see a macro trend that is affecting lots of businesses, how people work, how small businesses operate. And when you think about it, some of the most amazing financial success stories of the last 10 years, Google is one of them. I mean, Google's entire business is based on the back of 4 million small businesses buying advertising. And you can argue Google is like the greatest hero in the future of work, to be honest. In this case, they've helped small businesses to figure out very efficiently how to be effective at managing their sales channels and their marketing channels to get potential customers. And we think there'll be other solutions that are meeting the needs of those same 4 million businesses. It might be on the HR side. It might be on the supply chain side. I would agree with you that it is a little bit vague, and you know that just means it's going to be a bit more risky, but it also means that me and my team, we need to be a bit more creative in how we think about things.
Right. So on that note, what do you look for in a company before you invest?
There's really just two or three things that are really important. It's obviously the market. How big is the opportunity? And sometimes that's pretty obvious. Healthcare is big, right? It's the biggest part of the economy for most countries. Education's big. But we try to think about how big is the opportunity, and then we try to think carefully about what are the advantages or what are the special competitive advantages this company might have. But I would say beyond the market, the most important factor we look at is really the team, because it's going to be the founding team, either the founders and or the two or three key employees that surround the founder or founders that are going to build this massive business. And they need to display to us certain characteristics. This is a bit more art and less science because we're dealing with people. Unfortunately, in spite of all the AI investors who want everyone to be a robot, it's not going to be that way yet. So some of the things we look for are entrepreneurs visionaries, but at the same time, they can get things done. So they're not too caught up on the vision, and they're not too caught up on the execution. They're kind of somewhere kind of in between. So that's one thing we look for is, you know, that interplay between having vision and big picture thinking, but at the same time, just an incredible willingness to get things done. Secondly, we look for entrepreneurs that, I'll be honest, are slightly abrasive. We find entrepreneurs whose interpersonal skills are too good or are too smooth may not be the best entrepreneurs. We need people who push back a little bit. In fact, how I like to say it is, I hope entrepreneurs listen to me about 1/3 of the time. And 2/3 of the time, they're polite and they do whatever else they need to do. So we're looking for, I guess you could describe that as independent thinking. However, a level of maturity and willingness to listen, at least. So, you know, at least, you know, let's have a little bit of mutual respect where I'll listen to the entrepreneur and the entrepreneur will listen to me and my team, or at least listen 1/3 of the time, like I said. But, you know, make their own decisions and have that conviction to do that. We also look for entrepreneurs that have, of course, exceptional communication skills, that are completely committed. It's really important that entrepreneurs have a high level of commitment to the venture. Now, that means, did they put up their own money? Or even better, did they convince their in-laws to put up their own, to put money into the venture? I mean, that provides a lot of pressure. I mean, we want everyone to feel mutual pain if the business doesn't go as well. Ourselves as investors, we're going to feel the pain because we put in our money and our time too, because time's it's opportunity cost, and we want the founders to feel the same way. And so, you know, those are some things that we think about when we look at a founder, and we try to assess their, you know, their capability to build these mega businesses.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Fritz Demopoulos. He is an industry expert in the startup scene and the founder of Hong Kong-based Queens Road Capital. And we are talking about the future of Asian startups, the next wave of startup trends, as well as the things that he looks for in a startup before investing in them. Stick around, more from Fritz and Queens Road Capital when we come back, BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
And we are back on Enterprise. I'm Arvind Yuvraj, and my guest today is Fritz Demopoulos. He is the founder of Queens Road Capital, which is a venture capitalist firm that's looking to invest in the next wave of Asian startup giants. Okay, so what about people who start startups just to exit? You know, what are your thoughts on that trend?
Yeah, it's true. I think there's some people who I think are just arbitrage mavens, and they're just looking for a flip. And to be honest, in any large market, in any hot market, you're going to have the flippers. People coming in and out, we have the traders. I mean, that's fine. And, you know, those people, they provide some distortion to the market. Because not only do they just want to start the business to sell the business, but they may act recklessly, meaning they may bid up the price for key talent or maybe for scarce advertising resources. And so they may do things that are slightly reckless because their end goal may be short term. And that causes some distortion in the market. I don't think it hurts the market, but it does cause some distortion. Now, having said that, there are different theories about this idea of an exit or selling your company. Some investors who I respect a lot advise entrepreneurs, never think about your exit. Just think about and focus solely on building a business. I don't agree entirely. There's another view, and this view that I hold is, sure, think about your exit. 2% of the time in a given month, an amazing entrepreneur is probably gonna work 300 hours 250 to 300 hours. Mm-hmm. So they're going to spend, I think in those 300 hours, sure, you know, maybe spend 6 hours thinking about exit. And what does that mean? It means building relationships with companies that could buy you. It could be studying the public companies and understanding some of the decisions they made early in their life cycle to get to where they are today. It could mean just understanding the market, understanding how companies operate, you know, the unit economics related to demand generation, for example, or pricing strategies, or some of these details that relate to just the market rate for things, to understand, you know, how other companies have been bought and sold. Again, 2% of an entrepreneur's time in the first few years makes total sense to me. I'm not saying 10%, but then over time, when companies become more successful, they start to scale. They enter into something called the growth stage after a few rounds of investment. Well, those businesses, obviously, the CEO and the board start thinking a little bit more about exit. And that, and of course, if things are going really well, they may even get to consider an IPO. Or they may consider certain type of sale or maybe other type of exit opportunity. And they may start spending more than the 2% of their time, maybe 10% of their time. But in the early days, it's going to be a small fraction of one's time. And you know, that's how I think it should be.
Okay, let's talk about startup mistakes in this context, in you know, from a VC's perspective. What are some of the mistakes that startups make when pitching their company?
You know, generally the mistake is entrepreneurs, of course, you know, they're energetic and they want to get things done. And so their time horizon is very short because they got to get stuff done. But we as investors, and we're managing a portfolio of companies, we're willing to take our time because we want to get to know those entrepreneurs quite well. And so one of the mistakes is the entrepreneur doesn't understand that we as investors might have the 20-hour rule where we want to spend 20 hours with an entrepreneur. Through meetings, maybe we go on a hike, have a meal, meet their friends, things like that. And the entrepreneur's mistake might be, well, so I think that's one mistake. I think a second mistake entrepreneurs make is they may not understand the process that a potential investor goes through. And it is a fair question to ask an investor, hey, what's your process? How do you make a decision? In fact, some of the questions you've been asking me, I mean, you know, why can't an entrepreneur ask that to a potential VC? So what do you think of the market? So I think that's another mistake is maybe some entrepreneurs just don't understand, you know, the process, and they kind of forget to just ask the question, how do you make decisions? I think a third mistake is sometimes entrepreneurs aren't completely committed. And what I mean by committed is, do they put up enough of their own money? It doesn't have to be a lot, but it has to be enough, as I mentioned, for that shared pain. And it's true, not every entrepreneur is going to have financial resources. Fine. Convince your in-laws, your family, your friends. And if not that, at least convince three or four amazingly capable people to join you in your adventure, because that says something. In fact, that says something more than putting in your own money. You know, have you convinced an amazing engineer from some amazing company to give up his or her amazing opportunity to join you? Wow, that's cool. And so some entrepreneurs like don't understand, you know, like the signaling involved with commitment or lack of commitment. You know, they say that one of the greatest traits of an entrepreneur is self-awareness, which essentially means understanding one's personal limitations and just being brutally honest with those limitations, which is fine because once you know your limitations, you can easily solve your problems because now you know, well, like the missing piece of the puzzle. And I think some entrepreneurs may not like understand that, especially when they're talking to investors. Or they may not have taken the time to reflect on some of their own weaknesses. And what's very, very interesting is there has been a misperception that entrepreneurs are kind of like Richard Branson, right? They're mavericks, they make a lot of noise, sometimes they wear makeup and dresses, apparently. Sure, that's part of it sometimes. You know, sometimes as entrepreneurs, we have to do that. I'm not saying wearing dresses and makeup, but I mean, we have to be gregarious. We have to push the envelope. But on the flip side, many entrepreneurs I know are shockingly cautious, thoughtful, introverted. And so sometimes there's a mistake that potential entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs don't realize that it isn't just about being like Richard Branson. It's also being a slightly neurotic introvert who's just thinking about all the different angles and opportunities.
Right. So tell me about this science fiction. You're working on a science fiction project.
science fiction project. And so what we've organized last year in Hong Kong is we've brought together filmmakers and writers, industry professionals and fans, to just talk about sci-fi in the East and sci-fi in the West. And, you know, we think science fiction as a category resonates with consumers. It's one of the biggest Hollywood categories. And what's interesting is within the Asian region, there's all sorts of new writers emerging. I mean, Lu Zixin out of China is just an amazing writer. Cho Zhen, she's a Malaysian writer. She's based in the UK. In fact, she's coming to our event next year. And so all sorts of interesting science fiction and fantasy writers. And you know, we think it's a great category. You know, we live in times that are driven by technology, obviously. And Isaac Asimov once said that science fiction is essentially about how does humanity react to technology and science. And I thought that was a pretty compelling quote, and it's kind of one of the reasons why, you know, kind of we're doing this. And what we hope to do is, and it's called Melon, and it's a nonprofit, and we're doing it to just enhance the cultural fabric of, you know, the cities that Melon will take place in. So it started in Hong Kong, and now we're bringing it to Singapore and some other places in the region.
Nice. Think of coming down to Malaysia?
Yeah, we'd love to. And again, you know, one of our tentpole speakers this year is going to be, she's a Malaysian writer, and she's won a lot of awards. And so it's super excited to have her. And you know, we're constantly on the lookout for who are the emerging new talents in sci-fi. And maybe we can help to promote them. We can introduce to the audiences, you know, new types of writers, new approaches, and maybe that might, you know, just enhance, broadly speaking, you know, our culturalism, which is totally cool. But that may also maybe inspire some people to do some amazing things. It'll be totally cool. We're excited about that.
Okay, I want to talk to you about challenges for a bit. You know, tell us about some of the challenges of running a VC or running Queen's Road Capital.
Yeah, you know, there's a few challenges. It's kind of tricky because most VCs are a little bit older. Well, I mean, you know, like they're not in their 20s, put it that way. So a little bit older because they have experience and they have financial resources. But when you're a little bit older with experience and resources, you also may be less relevant to what's happening today on the ground. What is that 18-year-old doing? What is that 22-year-old doing? And so for us, our challenge is to remain relevant, to understand what are the new products people are using? What are the new, how do people engage these days in a connected world with digital technologies permeating everywhere, with VR now and smartphones and, you know, shared living, shared workspaces, all that sort of stuff. And we have to be on top of it. We have to be as relevant as when we were young ourselves. And, you know, that's a challenge because we're not experiencing it in some ways, because we don't need to live in a shared environment, right? if you think about it, because we're not in our early 20s. And so to, you know, try to relate to that and understand that, I think is a big challenge as a venture capitalist.
Hey, if you miss any parts of this show, you can always stream it again on the BFM app. And if you don't have the BFM app, then you can always get it for free on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. For those listening to us live, though, stick around because coming up next, we have Resource Center. And it's that time of month again for digital marketing updates. Our guests today are Jan Wong and Jeremy Ng from Open Minds Resources. And they are going to discuss the upside. Yeah, the upside of the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal. That should be fun, as well as how Instagram is making it easier for people to connect. All that is coming up at 11 o'clock after some messages and, of course, some music. This has been Arvind Yuvraj with special guest Fritz Demopoulos of Queen's Road Capital, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.